Who would have thought that stepping into an abandoned building and exploring the tunnels and the darkness would have been more therapeutic than years and years and thousands of dollars of therapy? Was everywhere. I mean, everywhere you looked, the world seemed kind of a little darker and everything seemed kind of like it was drying up and it was abandoned. And sometimes it, you know, takes you hitting rock bottom in life to kind of wake up and see what's really going on around you. That's when I noticed more and more of these abandonments and places that were just forgotten. It kind of brought me back to when I was a kid, and I remember the first abandoned house I ever really saw or knew of was right down the street from me in the woods, and it was kind of this forbidden playground. And I remember going up to it and looking inside its windows and seeing what was essentially a time capsule. And it scared you, but it thrilled you. I always regretted never having the courage to go into that house. And I guess when things kind of hit rock bottom for me, I felt like I had nothing else to lose. And it was just one of those childhood fantasies that kind of came back up again. And when I started finding these places, I found other people in the dark there. And there were other people who had their same reasons for being there that I did. And I realized that we all had kind of like a single common thread, and that was utter and absolute curiosity.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Kraz Files podcast with Mr. Kraz and Garth. It's Thursday, the 19th of March, 2015. If folks would like to get this podcast, it's available from iTunes, so you can download and subscribe over there, and you can also get the podcast from podomatic.com. Look for the Kraz Files, C-R-A-Z-Z, and we're also over at Facebook. That's the Kraz Files. I've turned that into a web page, so heaps of stories going up there, and you can also play our podcast each week there as well. And we're also over at Twitter, some stories going up there, and you can also grab the podcast over at Spreaker. You can send us an email to thekrazfiles@yahoo.com.au about anything you would like, and thanks for listening to our podcast. Okay, Garth, we're plugged in.
Ready to go.
Ready to go today. And we're joined by Giovanni Adovelli. Is that right, Gio?
That's right.
Pronounce
Hello.
It
nice to be here with you guys.
Yeah.
Hi, Giovanni. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, I'm good, mate. Good. It's a bit hot up here. We had some really cool weather, but now it's a sweat box. It's crazy. The weather's crazy. Yeah,
we had some bad winds here today for the past couple of days. It's been really cold here.
Yeah, freezing in the U.S. Frozen over. It's where are you again, Giovanni?
Right now, Connecticut.
You're in Connecticut. That is right. Yeah, wow. Yeah, so great speaking with you all the way there, connected onto Skype. And so it's good to have you. And I've been chatting with you a little bit over time, and you're good friends with Michael Horn, who we've had on a couple of times now. We love talking with Michael, very knowledgeable guy. And you're helping to spread our podcasts and going on Facebook and always on there, so thank you very much. It's great work helping us out. We appreciate that very much. And you do some very interesting things, and I thought it would be good to get you on and have a chat today. So thanks for joining us. Really good to have you here. You sent me just a little email here saying that you were you were born in Poland.
On a military base in Warsaw, Poland.
Yeah, and, was the place you were from? Wrocław? Is it?
It's pronounced Wrocław.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's a beautiful city. I only lived there for, I think it was 4 years, you know, before we moved around. And, you know, but it's really a beautiful city. I went back to Europe in 2008, you know, to visit. And it's really, really beautiful. You know, I wasn't really into photography back then as I am now. And I kind of regret that because it's just really, they have a lot of historical places that are worth taking pictures of. And, you know, so we lived around, you know, a lot of places. You know, the last place I lived before coming into the United States, because, you know, I had family here, was Germany.
Mm.
And, you know, we lived in Hamburg, Germany, Frankfurt, stuff like that. And so, you know, I went to school there. I spoke the language. Of course, I forgot it, you know, a few years after coming here. But, yeah, so we came here in 1989 and, you know, I, of course, moved around a lot when I was here. You know, we lived in Brooklyn, New York, and, you know, then I lived, you know, in the northern part of New York State. I lived in Long Island, you know, New Jersey, stuff like that, you know, Connecticut, Boston. And it was all primarily because of school, you know, because, like, I went to school. I had a lot of different majors throughout the years. I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And, you know, I finally got into, you know, computers and, like, the engineering aspect of that and kind of stuck to that, you know, educationally wise. So, yeah, that's pretty much with that.
You've moved around a lot, and you said you were born on a military base.
Yes.
Wow. There you go, huh? So... who did you come to? Where did who did you leave? How did you leave Poland? How did that happen?
Oh, because I had family here. I had family that was born in the United States that were living here.
Yeah,
you know, in Milwaukee and stuff like that. And I actually just recently found out I have family in Warren, Michigan, that I never even met through the power of Facebook.
Jesus. Jeez, you're like a hobo traveling around the all of America. It's amazing.
It's fun, you know. And then and I have some family in the UK, in England, some family, you know, my cousin, she's a tour guide in Turkey. So she's there like 6 months out of the year. She's, you know, she gives tour guides. Then she goes back home. And then I have family in Vancouver, Canada, and in Edmonton, Canada. You know, I never really got out there to see them, but yeah, we're just kind of like scattered all over the place, you know, primarily Northern Europeans. You know, I have a lot of like Italian culture, a lot of Italian blood in me, you know, some Polish, like Ukrainian, but you know, just mostly Northern Europeans. So,
yeah, amazing. And, I was, really impressed with your photography, Garth. If you have a look at our Facebook page and the page up on YouTube, the Kras Files on YouTube, the pictures there are from Gio, and I'll send you some more through Garth to have a look at these photos. Really, really nice photos. A whole mixture there, Gio, which I love, you know, the abandoned farmhouses and homesteads and the sort of underground photos that you take, all these abandoned places look like mental hospitals, and some of them look like old laboratories that have been abandoned. It's this sort of forgotten, decayed past of the United States that's all around you. That you're taking photos, and you sent me a great documentary called Urbex, a documentary, and I'll put that up on our pages after we finish. And I played a little bit at the start, and I'll just read here. It says, Garth, when a filmmaker... gee, are you still there? Okay, we're back. Sorry about that. A little bit of interference. But I was... sorry, Gio, we were talking about Urbex, a documentary, and I'll put this up later. And I was just talking about the little footnotes here, Giovanni, and it's just saying when a filmmaker falls to his lowest point, he happens to find salvation and inspiration amongst the darkness of America's forgotten and decaying past. And it's shot over the course of 5 years in three different states. His name is Chris Sandrowski. It's a documentary called Urbex, short for Urban Exploration, of course, and explores not only the ruins of our forgotten past, but an art form and culture populated by a diverse group of artists facing and fulfilling their deepest desires through art of photography and the oldest urge of all, curiosity, which I love. That's just great. Tell us a little bit about this, Gio, about this art form of taking photos of these abandoned, decaying places of the United States. And there seems to be so many more all over the place. I can't imagine places like Detroit City, which seems to have totally collapsed, and all this forgotten industry and past of the U.S. So interesting that you guys are documenting this, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because, you know, we actually see it differently than anybody else would. You know, like any normal person could just walk in there and say and see, you know, a building that's just fallen on top of itself. So we actually find art in that. You know, we take a lot of unique photos of these places in a way that a normal person wouldn't do. And, you know, when, of course, when you look at the photos I took and, you know, some of the photos that, you know, like my friend Jen and my friend Steve takes that, you know, you just really wouldn't imagine to see these places the way we captured them.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of, there's a lot of, you know, peeling paint and stuff like that. And like, you know, real decay. And, you know, that's the stuff we really like. We really don't like, you know, going to places that are like modern and, you know, kind of holding together. We really like, you know, the grungy stuff, you know, cause it's really interesting because, you know, you find things in there, you know, from the late 1800s, like, you know, original furniture and stuff like that. And
yeah,
it, like some of it is just in pristine shape. And it's just like, wow, I can't believe this is here. And, you know, it just looks really good on film. You know, when they take pictures of these stuff. So
Yeah. I'm just sending Garth. I'm sending you some emails now that Gio sent me into your inbox so you can have a look at these amazing photos. Yeah, incredible. So let us know a little bit more, Gio. About some of these places, and I guess you go to a lot of pretty creepy places as well.
yeah, there is a lot of those. Yeah, you know, and then and a lot of people actually mistake us for, you know, ghost hunters. We really are not ghost hunters at all. You know, we just go there, you know, just to take pictures and, you know, just kind of leave. But, you know, the things that happen to us in those places, we can't control, you know, because there's always, you know, something that weird that always happens.
Yeah.
A lot of times, you know, like, it's just like, you know, like cold spots and sometimes like, you know, a door opens and shuts. It's like, oh, okay, well, you know, there's no wind here, but
yeah, of course,
you know, let's carry on forward. So, but you know, it's a lot of fun. You know, you meet a lot of, interesting people in this hobby. You know, like, people that you actually, you know, you end up meeting are like your friends for life in most cases, you know, because you go and you experience these type of adventures with them. And, you know, like you could go and, you know, do this with someone you didn't meet, you know, the day before and then go and have this awesome adventure with them. All of a sudden you become like friends that you knew with for 10 years. You know, it's a real bonding experience.
Yeah. Oh, I bet.
It really is.
Yeah, I have some friends who are really deeply into it, they go and explore all under Sydney, old abandoned train stations, a couple of these guys go pretty deep, and they can be down underneath the sort of people walking right over their head in Pitt Street in centre of Sydney, and they can go under these stations, and they creep in at night and go through different hatches, and they talk about these hatches and holes in the floor with ladders that keep going down underneath, and kind of factories under there equipment and old stations, Garth. Amazing. And we have the geo just near me, only about 10-20 minutes away, Manly, which is a beautiful beach suburb, and they have a North Head quarantine station, which they do tours there now. This is the North Head quarantine station there. It's part of Sydney Harbour National Park. And this place operated as a quarantine station from the 14th of August, 1832, to 29th of February, 1984. And people were quarantined there when they were really sick. And so people actually go through there at night on these tours. And there's a lot written on this. Too many people have said they've felt all these strange occurrences and people touching them on their shoulder and all this stuff, breathing on their neck and all this. So I haven't done that tour yet, but, being a quarantine station, there's a couple of parts of it where they don't let people go because they say there are angry spirits there. So it doesn't, pretty full on. But we've got that all over Sydney as well because Sydney is so, so old and sort of so glossy and new on the top, which is amazing, isn't it, I guess? You see that as well. You get this glossy image with the trains and the modern technology and everyone rushing around and going to work. And then sort of underneath, there's this forgotten, lost sort of silent world with all this rusty sort of equipment and forgotten past, which is amazing, you know.
There was a documentary on that, wasn't there? A very scary one.
I think I sent that was a film. Was that the
film
one I sent you, Geo?
The
tunnel.
I watched it. It was pretty good.
yeah, a bit scary for you if you're going into those places. That was filmed under Sydney. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
That was filmed right under Sydney. Yeah. Basically in the center of Sydney town. That was underneath. Where there used to be, as I said, train stations and all this bustling, busy stuff going on. Makes you see life differently, doesn't it? You just realize we're just a speck in time, you know? We're just here for such a small moment in time. And that's why I think it's so interesting what you're doing and you guys do, because you're documenting and photographing this forgotten past that's there right underneath our feet and in old abandoned buildings and places all over.
Right.
I think in America it must be a bit strange because you probably get to see all these abandoned, because we hear a lot in Australia about so many with the financial problems in the United States, so many people losing their houses and stuff. And I've seen documentaries on our news here where they're showing entire neighborhoods just where everybody's left and the grass is growing over and they couldn't pay their mortgages to these rat bankers, and they've come in and seized their properties or whatever, and there's just all these abandoned places there. So that must be sort of a bit, well, heartbreaking for you as well if you do that sort of work.
Right, it is. And, you know, the actual city that is actually considered the mecca of abandoned buildings and stuff like that is actually Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah, wow.
You know? Yeah, that's, I mean, really, it's really, I mean, I've been there. I lived there for, I think it was like 2 months. I actually just went out there just to explore. And, you know, like every day we did something different for like 2 months in a row. And that, I mean, really, that's how much abandoned stuff there's there. And you know, of course, it's a dangerous place too. It's, you know, a lot of times when people go to these places, like, you know, you just got to be careful, you know what I mean? Because obviously you're not really supposed to be there, but when you go, you know, to some of these high-risk places, you know, like in Detroit and stuff, you really don't have to worry about, you know, like the law enforcement. You kind of got to worry about the people that are inside and what they might do. An example, what happened to me was I went in with my friends, we went there during the day, you know, to this old theater. And, you know, we were walking in there and we heard someone behind us. And I kind of stopped a few times just to make sure. And all of a sudden, this guy just came out and he was like, "Oh, what are you guys doing here?" And we're like, "Oh, you know, we're just taking pictures and, you know, we're leaving." And, you know, some of these people are really defensive about these places, especially in that part of town because they live there, you know. So, of course, we don't want to disturb anybody. And, you know, the guy was like, "Okay, you know, that's fine." So, you know, we took our pictures and left. The next day, another group of people go and they got mugged at gunpoint by 8 people. They took their cameras, I mean, their watches, jewelry, everything, you know? Mm. Yeah, so you just you really got to be careful.
So would this, Gio, would this, you know, sort of haunted place, if you like, that used to be a thriving manufacturing areas.
Oh, you mean Detroit, Garth?
Detroit.
Yeah, Motor City. It was a
Motor City
place
yes,
where they made all the cars. Detroit,
absolutely,
Michigan.
Yeah.
Such a. What's it like? Give us your idea, Gio, of Detroit City, because it just what a fall for those people.
It really is.
What an amazing place it was. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I never been there, you know, when Detroit was actually booming and, you know, the economy was high. You know, I seen a lot of documentaries about it and, you know, seen what it was like in the movies and stuff. But when I actually went there in person and seen it, it was just really, really depressing. And I was like, man, this place really, really gone to hell, so to speak, you know, like it wasn't in the best shape at all, you know, but like, I mean, the more, you know, active spots were like, you know, in downtown Detroit where, you know, there's still a lot of economy going on and stuff like that. And of course, there's still some stuff there that's abandoned. Like we went there at night once to go to this abandoned skyscraper and, you know, getting into that thing was an adventure. But, you know, we just went in there for the view because we went up all the way on the roof and, you know, you could kind of see Canada because it's right on the border.
Yeah,
and you can see the whole city, so it was just really amazing to see, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, there's like a lot of old churches. You know, that was really cool to see because you know, like the decaying and the architecture in the old churches. It was just really phenomenal to photograph that, you know. And of course, you could actually buy one. I remember we went there, and there was one for sale for like $10,000, which you know, a huge old church.
Jeez.
Yeah. And, you know, and then I actually, I don't know if I still have it, but I actually picked up a local real estate guide and you could buy houses for like $100.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, it was really crazy to see that.
Yeah. This is what I asked you before. It's an incredible fall, isn't it?
What was the cause of it? Have you gone into that, Gio? Into the, I mean, we know the government. Governments in all countries, including Australia, they with these declarations, like we originally had one called, the original one that came in Australia was the Lima Declaration, and it was brought in through the back door, and they cut, they said at the time, 30% of our manufacturing, and we're only a small country. And is this type of, these type of declarations where they made deals with these third world countries to actually reduce the manufacturing power of, say, Detroit at the time?
Oh, yeah,
absolutely. Because, you know, they were, you know, a town that had a lot of, you know, car manufacturing places. And, you know, when they started closing, that's when the economy started going down.
Yeah, it was a powerhouse, wasn't it? I mean, that was a powerhouse, world-class industrial powerhouse, Garth, there. I think it was the fourth largest American city by the mid-20th century. So, you know, and it was, there's so much history and culture there, but yeah, with those cars, that's what they did, Garth. They just pulled the rug out from underneath their feet and pushed it offshore.
Some people say it was the pressure from the Japanese, particularly the car market, who were bringing cars into America at a you know, at a much cheaper price. But I don't see it that way. I see the government behind this. Unfortunately, I tend to look at the bad side of things, and I just can't blame the competition of the Japanese with the American ability to manufacture, because they were one of the greatest countries, as was Germany, say, for example, the greatest countries in the world who could manufacture efficiently. And I just can't see that that is some sort of an excuse that they're telling us, that it was the Japanese that brought their own market into America, and this is what crashed everything. Because I think it goes deeper. Have you any views on that?
You know, I'll tell you, Garf, I wouldn't be surprised, though. You know, I really wouldn't. But but I'll tell you something. What you just said, German manufacturers. When I was in Detroit, you know, every time I went up there, you know, I never brought my own car. I actually got a rental car. And I'll tell you a funny story. Because the rental car I got was, you know, was a German car. It was an Audi. And, you know, when I went up there, you know, people didn't really like, you know, anyone driving, especially from out of state with a foreign car. So that, you know, that car got keyed a lot because it was an American.
Bloody Volvo drivers.
Yeah, probably they are. But so,
yeah, yeah, but,
yeah.
Oh, well, Jesus, man. Yeah. This Garth and I were talking about Detroit quite a bit on our early podcast, weren't we, Garth?
Yes.
To see this city in this shape now. So tell us a little bit more, Gio, about this place going through Detroit. How many places, are abandoned? Do you just get shops and, as you said, theaters? And amazing that you're talking about skyscrapers that are just empty. And I guess you get a lot of housing communities empty now. Where have the people gone? Are they still sticking in there, or a lot of people have just moved to other places in the U.S.?
I think, you know, the people that are, you know, were seeking to, you know, get employment, they certainly moved out of the town. But as far as, you know, the people living in those buildings, absolutely. That's actually like that in a lot of those places. I don't think I've been to any building in that city that didn't have occupants living in it. You know?
Yeah.
And it's really sad. And, you know, after a while, I actually... You know, every time before I went out to one of these places, I actually stopped at, like, you know, a local store to get canned foods and stuff. And every time I ran into somebody, I actually gave them food because I just felt bad, you know?
And so, this is in America. And some.
Yeah. I mean, you know, of course, you know, you see that stuff a lot in these type of buildings, you know, predominantly in Detroit, you know. But actually, it's in a lot of places. You'd be surprised, you know, because like I told you, I've been to Detroit, you know, a few times. The one time I did it for, you know, like 2 months straight, but, you know, more actively, you know, throughout, you know, like in New York and, you know, Connecticut, Boston, stuff like that. So, you know, you do run into people in those type of places. And, you know, every time, you know, we did, you know, if it was like a pattern, you know, we always brought stuff to help the people because, you know, they're homeless. It's just, it's a horrible thing, you know. Just, I couldn't have a heart, you know, not to help them. You know what I mean, Adam? It's just...
Yeah, no, I know. I've seen some shows on our, some documentaries here where they're showing people living in the woods outside of these places, just with buckets of water and tents. Amazing. And just looking now at the, in economic terms, the post-war years, 1945 to 70, brought these high levels of prosperity because of the automobile industry, just highly prosperous. There's just a picture here of the Hudson Department Store in 1951, just absolutely amazing. And it said it opened, Hudson Department Store opened in 1911 and closed in 1986 and was torn down in 1998. There's also a picture here I'm looking at of the Detroit skyline in July 1942. Wow, booming. So amazing. To see this booming town turn into a city, and as we talked about, all the booming theaters and plays and restaurants and eateries, and then you go there now in 2015 or when you visited, and it's just abandoned, you know, and broken down and rusted. It's just crazy. Aren't we supposed to be getting better as a human race? Aren't we supposed to be getting better with our technology and building better housing and better cities and cleaner cities, and so no one's left out in the cold poor? So this is a really scary sign of what may be coming. you know? It really is.
No, right. Exactly. I mean, you know, I was there. This was back in 2010. You know, I don't know if much has changed, you know, in 5 years. But, you know, hopefully it is. I mean, I can't really speak for the town of how it is now because, you know, I really haven't been there in a long time. But, you know, hopefully it's improving in some aspects.
Yeah.
You know, but, yeah.
Yeah, we can only hope that. What's your experiences going throughout the U.S.? What's your boots on the ground idea of what's happening now? What are you seeing around you in America? Are you seeing this decay, or are you seeing like a bit of a spring back, a bit of a pushback? How are you able to gauge this sort of, because you're sort of going around and taking photos and moving around a little bit, and you're sort of just sort of like a fly on the wall, I guess, just sort of taking notes, and you know, you're the one who's going to know, so fill us in a little bit, because we're interested in the U.S. and what's happening there.
Well, I'll tell you, in reference to these type of places, a lot of these places are getting torn down now, you know, and, you know, people are buying the land or, you know, and making them into like condominiums, like, you know, people live in them, you know, like stuff like that. And other places are getting torn down, but a part of the building is getting saved and people are, you know, building around it and actually live in them, you know. So a lot of these places are, you know, they don't last too long. They really don't, especially if it's like near like a big city. You know, eventually somebody's going to buy that and, you know, mow it down and build something on top of that, you know, just to profit off of it. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Exactly.
So, like, the historical thing, it's really out the door. You know, there's a lot of historical preservation societies, you know, that try to save these places, and I participate in a few of them. You know, I can actually tell you the names of these places. You know, one of them was the Buffalo Central Terminal, which is in, you know, Buffalo, New York, and the other one was the Derby Opera House in Connecticut. You know, so we went in there, you know, we got permission from the caretakers, and what we did was we took pictures of these places, and then we gave them the pictures so they can sell to raise money to preserve these historical buildings, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? Like, we try to do a lot of good in this, too, you know? And, you know, we try to enjoy them as much as we can, you know, while they last. But, you know, it's really interesting, you know, speaking about myself, how I actually got into this, this whole thing, because this was actually in late 2007, you know, when I was still going to school, and, you know, one of my friends said, hey, do you want to get a job working in, you know, a group home? And I was like, what is that? Because I didn't really know anything about it. She was like, oh, you know, it's with people that have, you know, mental disabilities. I was like, all right, yeah, why not? You know, because I was going to school, what else was I going to do besides going to class? You know what I mean?
Of course.
So I ended up getting a job there, and it wasn't long after that before, you know, I made, you know, friends being in that type of field. And one day someone came up to me. It was this girl, and she says, hey, do you want to go see an abandoned hospital that was built in the late 1800s? And I was like, yeah, sure, let's go, you know, and this is pretty much how it all started. It brought me a lot of adventures, and I was just amazed, really, by, you know, everything that was inside these places till this day. And you'd be surprised, you know, how many documents are actually left inside, like original documents.
Mm.
And, you know, from that era. And I'll tell you one story that I read. In one of these documents that I will never forget, that I was actually telling my friends about the other day. And this document was from the late, I think it was like 1890 or it was like 1910, somewhere in there. And it was about, and it was like a log entry file. You know what I mean? So pretty much this type of book, it was like this old book. It was really big, and it was just like log entries, you know, from people's history. So this one story was, there was a man, and it was the middle of the night, and he was, like, you know, observed by people in the neighborhood, like, wandering around looking for something, and, you know, they called the local police, so when the police got there, they couldn't communicate with him, so they thought he was you know, mentally unstable. So they put him in to one of these hospitals. So what happened was, as I read on, I think it was a few months that went by, this guy started speaking, and he wasn't from America. He was from, like, France. And he said, look, I'm not crazy. I just learned how to speak English. It was raining that night. I lost my my eyeglasses, and I couldn't find them. I couldn't communicate with the police. And you guys put me in this hospital, you know, giving me all these pills. You know, I wasn't crazy before, but now I'm starting to go crazy. You know, and I never got to finish reading that story of what happened to that guy because the rest of the pages were corroded. But yeah, it was just something that's really interesting. I was like, man, I can't believe it. And, you know, of course I was working in the field already at that time. I wasn't going to stay there, but you know, now that I actually got in, you know, to go into these places and reading what these places were about, I was like, I can't believe I'm actually working in this field. Let me stay a little longer and get what it's like, you know, working in this field in the modern day. And, you know, it's really interesting, you know, because, you know, back in the day, you know, there was a lot of people that, you know, they were like violent, you know, really mentally insane, violent. They used to get lobotomies, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now in the modern days, what they do is they give them, you know, liquid medications, which I call them liquid lobotomies.
Yeah.
You know, because you know, some of these things are just horrific.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it depends on, you know, on the person's, on the, what do you call it, disability, because they go, they use a book called, I think it's called the DSM-5, and it's a book that's referenced by a lot of psychiatrists, and, you know, it goes by the symptoms. So if somebody's presenting symptoms of this, or they act a certain way, okay, we're going to label them as schizophrenic, or, you know, yeah, so on and so forth. So, and it's really interesting, you know, seeing what it's like in a modern day, and actually being in that field, and working in it. And I got to tell you, you know, some of the stuff I've seen working in those places, Adam, it's really tragic. It really is, because a lot of these people get neglected. And, you know, of course, there's a lot of documentaries covering that. But it's really scary.
Yeah.
You know?
I think there's a lot of sane people in these places, too.
Yeah.
they might lock us up in their gas.
I actually want to tell you a story about that, because I actually worked with a guy, you know, that was in one of these places, and he was always telling me that he wanted to go to school and get a degree. And, you know, everybody around him, anybody around it that ever worked with him, they were like, no, he's not mentally stable. And, you know, I didn't look at that. I was like, you know what? I see potential in this guy. So you know what happened? This guy actually went and obtained a degree in computer science.
God, is that right? Yeah. Yeah.
I helped him. I really did. I helped him with all his homework and all that stuff, and I stuck by him, and he did it. And he eventually ended up, you know, getting off all of his medications, and he got a job, and I still keep in touch with him to this day, and he thanks me all the time because, you know, thanks me for saving his life, for believing in him, you know?
So, yeah, well, that's it too, Gio, because, you know, you can look at our own society that we have around us, and sometimes I often wonder whether they're insane or I'm insane. You know,
right?
Yeah,
it's got to be one or the other. But I tend to look at society around me, and I just think what's happening in this country just recently, which Adam and I discussed, and Adam put up on Facebook, is absolutely saying to us that there is insanity out there. Insanity with our doctors, insanity with our governments, our health departments, and on it goes. And are these people, you've got to say, are they insane or not? Because some of the things they do.
Yeah.
And it's like that guy that you put on Facebook with his child. He merely gave her a hemp CBD, which she started to progress on and improve dramatically. And they locked him up in jail. I mean, this is the sort of insanity we see in our own country.
Yeah,
and that's only a little bit. I could go on for a couple of hours talking about this, and not even touch the sides. It's that serious here. the insanity of our governments and of the people in control of our governments.
We're making you insane, Garth. As Gio just said, they're making you...
That's what I'm saying. I often ask the question, am I insane? Am I going insane? Is this really happening?
Yeah.
No, but you've got to sit down and take a deep breath and say, no, you're not insane. It's those people out there that are insane.
Oh, it's the media making you look insane as well. Like they're saying that people are weird now if you choose to have a healthy diet. You're a terrorist. If you don't want to get jabbed up with genetically modified cancer-causing vaccines, then you're a denier and you're weird. And they're doing this.
Yeah.
They're doing this, and it's very creepy and it's slow. And they're making sane people like us into the crazy ones, while these lunatics who are running the show, who are absolutely out of their minds, and most of them are child pedophiles and perverts, they're coming out as the sane ones. So it's a crazy world, Garth, we live in.
It's crazy, yes.
If you question this false reality that we're spoon-fed now, you're crazy. And as Gio just explained about this guy, he wants to get a degree, but they're telling him he's crazy. And so they'll get him on the drugs, souped up on the drugs, and get him at the windowsill staring out there with drool coming out of his mouth. And now he's been fixed by the medical system. But there he did. He went out and got a degree. So while they told him he was nuts. So it's the same with all of us. He's an expression of all of us, a reflection of all of us, Garth, believe me. They're making us all think that we're nuts. They're making us question our very lives. And we're all sort of living this life, a lot of people now, of uncertainty. They're sort of uncomfortable in their own skin because they're not comfortable in this life, because the government and the media and the TV and the news is telling them that. So we have to get back our lives, Gio, for sure, you know. And I like that about what you guys are doing. I like that about that film where he said, you know, at the start, in the clip that I put, that, you know, you can he didn't have to bother about all this years of medication and because he obviously was having problems, and he went in and got this sort of therapy, taking photos and being in these abandoned places, which is strange therapy, but it obviously works, you know?
No, it really does, you know, because, you know, when you go to a lot of these places, you really find peace, and it's kind of crazy if you think about it, but you know what I mean? Like, if you speak to anybody that doesn't really know anything about this hobby, and you know, you tell them, oh, you know, I go to these places to sometimes get peace of mind, they're going to look at you like you're nuts. You know what I mean? But it really is therapeutic, because there's nobody around you. And especially if you're in a big building like that, there's nobody around you, you know? So it really is. So when they covered that in the documentary, in the very beginning, they really are telling you the truth there. And I'm telling you firsthand.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's amazing to see, like, if you look at what you're talking about now, and then you compare that to a really busy city where everyone's rushing every different direction going to work, and then you've got this abandoned place with nothing there.
Right.
You know, it's an amazing place. What do you reckon, Garth? Do you think you could go into an abandoned psychiatric hospital? at night? looking Gio, at these, especially in New York City, we'll slip over to there now, because all these abandoned asylums and psych wards and hospitals and power plants. I was looking at a map of New York City, and it was, you will probably know the name. You've been there, obviously. There's a big, I don't know what the name is, there's a big abandoned mental asylum in the park there. It's a huge Kings place. Park? Yeah, I saw it on the map. You can see it. It's a massive place that's very old and abandoned. Do you know what the name is of that one?
Kings Park.
Yeah, the actual mental asylum. That's
the name of it, Kings Park.
Oh, that's the name of it. Yeah, have you been to that?
Yeah, I've been, yeah. They're actually starting to tear those buildings down.
Yeah,
now.
I heard that. We were just looking on Google Earth. It's just huge, right in the woods there. Yeah.
You know, I actually met a lady in one of the film festivals a few years back, there was actually a patient there. And when they were screening some of the movies, I actually got to talk to her and her producer. And I gave her some of my photos, and I told her she could use for her documentary, because she was actually in one of the buildings that I seen. And her documentary, I don't remember the name of it, but I can find it and send you the information. But it's really interesting to watch that, you know, from a patient's point of view. You know, someone that actually been there, has been committed, got out and made a movie about it. You know?
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Kings Park Psychiatric Center.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's almost, I think a lot of it is gone now, you know.
It was saying it really was established in 1885.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Jeez. So you've been around in there taking photos in there.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I did some of those buildings there. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, it's, of course, you know, I really try not to talk about the actual names of these places, but you know. But this place is almost really gone, so it's no problem.
What do you think? What do you think they're going to put there? They're just going to continue it into the parkland, or?
Yeah, it's either that, or you know, they're going to build on top of it.
Yeah,
you know, like do most of these places. So I actually, you know, I don't want to tell you anything that's not true. So I really don't know. I haven't really kept up with it that much because it actually has been, you know, about a year and a half, 2 years since I actually been active in this. You know, I actually kind of started getting into other stuff, you know, of course, when I found Michael Horn stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was all into that, you know, and especially I actually wanted to tell you about,
we'll move over there, Switchfoot Geo, into this work.
The book called the Might of the Thoughts, which you can get on Michael's site, you know, dayfly.com. If you go into Dayfly shop, it's all the way on the bottom. And I got to tell you from, point of view, that book, you really can't go wrong reading that book, Adam, because really what it does is it teaches you how to think, and the basis of it is how to applying the correct thought process into your daily life, and you really learn to be a creator of your own reality by reading a book. And I'm telling you from experience, because I have actually done this and applied the strategies used, and I have attracted things to myself that I never thought I would.
Of course, yeah.
It's really amazing. Like the power of neutral negative thinking process, neutral positive thinking process is just really amazing. If you actually learn how to do that, it just, like, amazing things can happen.
Yeah, Michael told us about this book, and it's available in Australia from the Figu Australia shop. I can put that link up. It's $40. Yeah. It's called The Might of Thoughts, and it's the root and the fruits of all human phenomena are one's own consciousness and its thoughts, the might of which translates everything into reality. So Garth and I have been talking about this a lot as well, that about our consciousness and how we draw, if you will, make our own realities all around us, from every person in our lives to everything that happens to us. We're creating this, but unfortunately in today's world, we're doing it unconsciously. Which is, you know, we need to get back in the driver's seat, don't we?
Yeah, you do. And really, if you start reading that, you know, I have the book here. I got through the first 10 chapters. You know, I'm not done with it yet, but, you know, just applying the strategies using the first 10 chapters, I started getting results, and I was like amazed. Really, I was, because for the longest time, you know, I was into, you know, spiritualism and stuff like that. I read, you know, some of the other books on, you know, law of attraction and stuff like that, and I never really got any results from any of that. But once I read The Might of the Thoughts, that's when things started happening, because, you know, that book actually tells you things in there that the other books on the market don't. You know,
really, that's interesting, amazing. Because it's actually a science now, because quite a while ago, Bruce Lipton, I think it's Professor Bruce Lipton, he was extensively involved in this type of thing. And the wisdom, he calls called it the wisdom of your cells, and how you actually perceive things and how it affects your health, your body, and everything that happens. Yeah,
right. Very interesting. Each cell has, you know, their own energy, so to speak. You know, so by when you think stuff, I think there was actually some scientific methods used to test this theory, but pretty much they took someone and they measured their thinking process, and they actually examined this person's cells in their body, and they seen how the cells were moving in like different directions by the things that they were thinking. You know, it was just really amazing to actually read like the scientific stuff about that. It was just really, it's true. It's all true.
Yeah.
Well, Bruce Lipton, you know, he was claiming that our cells are intelligent.
Yeah.
And, et cetera, et cetera. Now, in this more modern era of the when they get into this consciousness, which a lot of science now, well, not a lot of science, but some science is getting into it now, because the reason they shelved it, because they can never understand it. And when you get into this nanotechnology, getting down into the atom itself, it appears that these like protons and that are intelligent. Yeah. And this is something that boggles the brain, because they're doing things that can't be explained. And this is to do with our consciousness. As they're digging more into that, they're finding these things that are unexplainable to our now modern science.
Well, they call our DNA junk, Garth. How many times have we said this? They just don't want to go into it, because if they do, this is going to lead off world. And we got this from the Daily Mail I sent you the other day, Garth. This is from new science coming out. They were saying mystery of our 145 alien genes. And they said scientists discover some DNA is not from our ancestors, and say it could change how we think about evolution. So humans contain alien genes not passed on from our ancestors. And this is new research. So this is what Michael was talking about as well, Garth, that we have been genetically altered or engineered.
Yes.
And this is all coming out now. So, as I just said, you know, they've brought us up through these prison camps, schools and universities, telling us that most of our DNA is junk. I mean, can you believe that? An ultimate insult to the human being. And now we're finding out this stuff. So they talk about horizontal gene transfer. The transfer of genes between organisms living in the same environment is known as horizontal gene transfer. So they're saying it is well known in single-celled organisms and thought to be an important process that explains how quickly bacteria evolve, for example, resistance to antibiotics. I've put this up, this is really interesting, Garth, because they're talking about instead we acquired essential foreign genes from microorganisms, which is really interesting as well. I don't think they can stop this stuff. And, you know, as Gio was talking about the might of the thoughts, that book really says it all, the heading of that book, doesn't it? I mean, are we kind of almost like a biological computer? As you said, Garth, our cells are alive and active, like we are, have been made. It's really weird when you think about it, especially when you look at the afterlife, that we humans die and this energy in us keeps going. What is that energy? Is it part of some technology that was imprinted or inbuilt into us? Is it part of a greater energy? It's amazing.
It's a spiritual energy. According to the information in Billy Meyer's case, it's spiritual energy.
Yeah.
You know, you go into this kind of beyond state, and they say that your spirit isn't conscious in between lives. You know, I think Michael actually spoke about this, that, you know, you don't choose your parents or anything like that. Nothing personal goes on. But, you know, all your thoughts and everything is kind of stored in these storage banks.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting to know about. And, I mean, really, like, you know, like Michael said many times, you know, the core of the case is spiritual teachings. And I don't know if you guys had a chance to actually go and read some of the spiritual teachings that are on his site.
I've done a few.
Written by Samyasi. It's actually over 200 something lines. It's just really, really interesting.
A lot are focusing on the UFO stuff, which I don't bother too much about. But as I told you before, there's problems with this case that I have. There's stuff in this as well that's mind-blowing and has to be looked at. Michael and I have gone back through email a little bit. I have a little bit of a different view on the death experience, whereas he has another view. It's similar, but I found some stuff translated through the Meyer case, and Michael said that he didn't totally agree with that, but it was actually from the Meyer writings that when Michael was sort of saying when humans die, they go into sort of a middle sort of limbo type state where they're not conscious as we are now. But we're finding out a lot of information that's saying that we are through the death experience and near-death experiences that people have, where they actually do go into an afterlife experience that's just as real as this. So that's interesting to look at as well. We'll be talking next week with Dr. Penny Sartori, who worked in emergency intensive care for 17 years, and she was a doctor, and she started noticing this over like nearly 30 years of her work of people dying. She helped people die and watched them through these experiences, and so many patients told her that they, when they actually did die on the operating tables and all this stuff, they actually went to this afterlife world that was just so beautiful they didn't want to come back from. And it's overwhelming stuff that we're reading about this as well, but also we hear that people have some bad experiences, which could be their own stuff, you know. Ultimately, it seems like it's very positive and very good, and that we're part of something very, very special, and that we humans are very special, and I think we're being blinded to that. So I think there's parts of the case that we can agree to disagree on, but at the end of the day, as you know, Gio, Michael is a very open man. And he loves having a debate and a conversation, but a lot of these people online, they attack him and they attack the case because they're weak and they're spineless and they don't want to come up and have a conversation, because he'll debate anyone. And they pick and they nitpick through the case, and they pick up things, and they put it out there. But the as you have focused on, and Garth and I have as well, the spiritual teachings of this, there's large parts of this that you just have to sit down and have a rest, and then you come back and you're like, wow, it's really interesting.
And of course, a lot of, and a lot of the, you know, documentaries that, you know, he made as a, you know, Time for Phils, Did They Listen? You know, a lot of those, they really are interesting to watch.
They really are. I've got two of them. He sent them to me,
Because at the end of one, I think it goes for like 25 minutes with all the scientific corroborated events that occurred after the publication date. Right?
Yeah.
I think you guys know what I'm talking about
there. Yeah.
It's really interesting to see that the dates, the actual documents with the dates, and then you see it being published 25 years later.
That's amazing.
It really is.
Yeah, I don't know where he's getting the information. But like all this stuff, you know, we need to go through it and take out from, like for you, you know, you've got the Might of the Thoughts, and you do, you read some of this material, Garth, and it just resonates with you. And whereas some mightn't, but you need to take out the parts that resonate with you and go with that, and then come up with your own conclusions and move forward your own way in this life. So it's, there's plenty of info, in there. And as I said, Michael's not one of the guys. I just have to email him, and he's straight on. He doesn't care.
Absolutely.
You know, he's always up for a talk and a debate. And he fully backs what he says. And he's an extremely intelligent guy, Garth, isn't he? Michael Horn, my God. He does not stop. He's just... He's really into what he does with 100%. So that's you know, really important, and he's a great guy to speak to. But it's amazing as well, Gio, all the stuff that's coming out, and now proving what this guy was saying, Meyer, back in the 60s and 70s and 80s in all these papers. You're getting it right in front of you on the TV and on the news sites. They're telling you in the science journals and that exactly what he said, you know, 25 years ago, which is just bizarre.
Well, it's coming out in that recent thing with the DNA and all that. I mean, in some of Meyer's writings or his interviews, you know, about the human origins on Earth. And that was very, very interesting, because it actually goes against, of course, the Darwin theory. And he claims that man was here first, and the animals or the apes derived from man. Now, that's an interesting – that's totally opposite to what the science – and they're still teaching the Darwin theory in the universities today.
Of course.
So that's a 180 degree turnabout on that, and I've never believed that man came from the apes anyway. It just didn't make sense to me, and particularly remember Lloyd Pye. We got into his stuff while he was alive, and he was a great scholar.
Oh, intervention theory. Yeah,
he got right into it, and you know, really what they were saying was really what Meyer is saying. Exactly the same, is that man didn't come from the apes, but where did we come from? That's the interesting question. Where did we come from?
As far as the Y genetic goes,
like the Y,
the white genetic, from what I understand from you know, Billy Myers' case, it comes from the Lyra Vega star system.
Yes.
You know, primarily. And I think there was people in the Sirian star system that genetically manipulated a human race that was very warlike and that would live less than 100 years to kind of protect themselves from other races that were in the universe that were not so, you know, peaceful. So they kind of used that race of people, you know, to kind of fight them off. So everything that I heard from Michael's stuff is that, you know, they took those people and put them on three different planets, Planet Malone, Planet Mars, and Planet Earth. And I think Michael explained this, but the people on Planet Malone, they had some nuclear stuff that they got into, blew their planet apart, which is now known as the asteroid belt. The people on Planet Mars, I think they got hit by one of the big comets, and the people that couldn't leave the planet, you know, got, you know, killed there. And by creational laws, you know, if you die on a planet, you got to inhabit the next nearby planet that supports human life, which is Planet Earth. So, you know, here we are. So, you know, on Planet Earth, there's, you know, many spirits that are from extraterrestrial origins.
Yeah, and there's much evidence, isn't there, Gio, on Mars and absolutely, these places of nuclear wars or some type of explosions that went off. And we talked with Stephen and Evan Strongarth about this, which they're looking into the ancient past of Australia. And they claim that the ancient Aboriginals Australia, they are adamant that their ancestors come from the stars, from the Pleiades. Which is so interesting, and it's all through their culture as well. And they were telling us that there seemed to be this peaceful, if you will, just to cut a long story short, sort of societies way back in our ancient past with the original inhabitants of Australia, with these people from the stars who interbred with them. But it seems there was something else came here, and there was some type of war, because these guys go to sites that look like they've been blown to bits, and they're very negative sites. And it seems maybe these people went off world, and maybe these other creatures, whatever they are, Michael seems to think they all look human, not reptilian or whatever, but they may have interbred with these people as well, which could explain our good and bad side. As well, so very, very interesting. Looking at that side of things, but we also Garth just had a new thing on the news here, Gio, yesterday, and scientists in Australia have captured alien radio signals. It says a group of Australian scientists have achieved a world first by capturing alien radio signals soaring through space. This is in Parkes, Garth, one of the biggest in the world. And so this has got scientists absolutely baffled. So this is very exciting. They're saying it's a world first. Really interesting stuff all coming out now. I'll send that through to you, Gio. It's really amazing.
Yeah, definitely want to see that.
Yeah, yeah, incredible stuff.
Well, certainly, yeah, when you look at what Meyer was saying, you know, he claimed that the first or the genuine terrestrial human being goes back 4.5 million years.
Yeah.
And that's an incredible distance to go back. What happened between then and now? But one of the interesting sides there, which I'm fascinated in, because I've read the Book of Enoch, you know, trying to find out where the human species did come from, and it's amazing in light of how they claim he actually mixed with these gods. He went with these gods. And it's been sort of said that he actually went on their spaceships. They weren't actually gods. They were actually ETs. And it all fits in with what Meyer is saying.
Right.
Because, you know, it doesn't make sense when you're talking about a guy that sort of disappears into the clouds with his god. But when it comes down to something you can understand or people can understand, where he did that, he got onto a spaceship and they took him to various places. So he was actually a human being, Enoch. He was part of these Earth people going way back.
Yeah, he was
back.
A prophet. Yeah, prophet in his day. Yeah.
Amazing stuff. So it's there's so much for us to learn yet, which is being hidden and kept away, because, and I think religions have played a big part in that.
absolutely.
They're hiding something. Modern
religions, you know, and I think that's why a lot of people are frightened to go there.
Yeah. What are they going to do, Garth?
Yeah, it's rather amazing.
What are they going to do when they find out about our junk DNA isn't human?
Yeah, I know.
You know?
Well, it's coming out because science, you know, for a long time was going, it wasn't going in the same path as our spirit or our consciousness. And that was established by many, many scholars. And they were saying until it comes in line or runs parallel to our consciousness, then that's when science will start to find things out. But science has been moved away from our consciousness on purpose, I feel. And it's been done that from various people who live on this planet, other people and other races, and also by the religions that were created.
Yeah.
And I really do believe that. And I believe that now that these younger scientists or these scientists are saying, well, I don't care if my papers never get printed in these fancy magazines. I'm going to do this and I'm going to look for the truth. And it's these younger, you know, highly intelligent men and women who are coming onto the scene that are saying, I don't care about the status quo anymore. You know, I want to look for the truth, and that's what's happening. And we're seeing this more and more and more today. And as more comes out, more getting behind it and pushing at the wheel sort of thing. And I think, you know, within probably 10 years, maybe we're going to learn so much more of where we came from.
Hopefully.
Yes, well, so. I'm confident. I'm confident because there's too much energy now in that. And as you said, Adam, when we had Michael Horn on with the Billy Meyer, how many more viewers or people, listeners, did we get?
Yeah,
so there's a fascinating amount of people like out there that are interested countries. In this subject.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's good, considering what Gio said with the you know, with the medication, you know, with the chemical lobotomies, and now we have a new enemy, which is a digital lobotomy through the TV, and people are getting their brains damaged, but they're getting their views changed, their way they see the world, everything. It's been given to them. It's programming you. You know, you're not coming up with your own thoughts and ideas. The TV and the news is telling you what to think and do. And so you're going through your life and dying with this idea pattern that's completely distorted. And we need to break off these shackles because they're shackles around our mind. We can't see them, taste them. We can't hear them. We don't know they're there, but they're there. And it really is a prison for your mind, Gia. And,
I don't watch TV. You know, I haven't had cable for like 6 years now. You know, all my stuff is like Netflix, you know, YouTube and stuff like that.
Yeah, documentaries and stuff. That's what we like. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's fine. Yeah. It can be very healthy, you know?
Absolutely.
Well, it's the only way to go because, you know, when you look at it, that Mike King from the Tomato Bubble, he's brought out some very good stuff, as others have. And particularly there's the present people who control Israel today and also all our banking system, which we won't go into now, but I'll just bring it up briefly. The Khazarians who have a unique way of controlling other people. And I mean, if you go back how they controlled our universities way back in the early 20th century, and they took hold of our intellectuals and they changed our intellectuals from people who could have vision. They sort of closed all that down where they had to become a sort of a person of political correctness, and they had to obey the rules that were laid down. And this actually choked the output, if you like, of our intellectuals. And if we don't have honest intellectuals who aren't compromised, who have vision, then as a race, we're not going to survive.
It's true.
It's as basic as that. And that's what these people have done, I feel. And we're seeing it today, how they've closed everything down in the universities and totally controlled it. And any sort of highly intelligent young person comes along, they immediately get them. And they compromise them one way or another.
Right.
And this is sad. It's really sad because it's affecting us out here. I mean, we're only laymen. But if we don't have these visionary intellectuals coming through, then yeah. I think it's not only sad, it's the death knell. I really believe that. Anyway, over to you.
Well, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, Michael actually tried to go to Arizona State University and, you know, present his stuff, and they banned his movie from the university.
Is that right? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, he said that. Yeah, it's like Geo Dr. Sherry Tenpenny canceled her visa to come to Australia to talk about the dangers of vaccines and all her research. You know, these people didn't want to hear and did this social media smear campaign against her, and she cancelled. So we're hoping to get her on sometime to let her talk, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you agree with or don't agree with. People have the right to give their opinion forth, whether it's Michael, whether it's you, Gio, me, Garth, or Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, whether you agree or don't agree. Everyone in a so-called democracy has the right to speak their words.
Well, wasn't
and this
Voltaire,
is getting shut down now.
Wasn't it Voltaire that said, he said, I don't always agree with my fellow men.
Of course.
But he said, I will I will die supporting his right to say it, sort of thing.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, the Billy Meyer case is a big case, and there's a lot of things that not everybody are going to agree with, but there is a lot in there that needs many looks. And this is an important thing. And you know, if people just want to criticize, then we don't want to deal with them, because they don't help anybody. And, this is an important thing. And there's information, as you said, Gio, in these books that people need to know, especially, as most people are living their lives unknowingly in a state of fear.
Mm. Exactly.
You don't want to go into death like that in fear, do you?
No, absolutely not. And, you know, and it's really interesting that, you know, his film got banned at a university system because, you know, a university is all about opinions and learning.
Oh,
right?
He should have shown porno, should have shown a porno movie. Yeah, they would have loved that. Yeah.
But, you know, it's really interesting. I mean, it's really scary if you think about it.
It is.
You know, because, you know, everything is all about political correctness. So if it's not politically correct or politically acceptable, they're not going to show it, or they're not going to accept it. You know, man.
And what is political correctness? What is it? What does it mean?
The stuff they want you to believe, the stuff you see in the news, or the stuff that is commonly accepted, in conversation.
Yeah,
amongst politicians and stuff like that. So
yeah, it's cultural Marxism.
Exactly.
Yeah, they make it the norm, and then if you speak out against it, you're crazy.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So.
All right, Gio. We'll finish up now. Is there anything you want to finish on before we plug out?
It was actually good speaking with you guys, and maybe we can chat again in the future.
Absolutely, no worries.
Yeah, sure,
yeah, of course. Yeah, it's good chat today.
For showing my friend's documentary, you know, he actually really worked hard on it. I'm gonna actually shoot him over an email and tell him about it. He's gonna be really excited.
I put a little clip at the start, as I said, like a 3-minute clip, just of him talking. And as I said, I'll put it up on Facebook, I'll Twitter it, and I'll put it all around, send it around. I've already told my friends who do it, so. It looks like a beautiful film, so I like these types of films, and we'll get it out there. When was it made?
This was a few years ago. I think maybe, let me think, this was maybe 2-3 years ago?
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
So he's put it up as a free film, or can people go to a site and buy a copy? Or
I think you can actually go and buy a copy for yourself, yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, okay. That would have been good to get the where people can go. Do you know it, or?
I don't. The only thing I had on that was that Vimeo clip that I gave you. But you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to get in touch with him.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask him all that, and I'll send it over to you.
And we'll put the links up.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Well, it's been great speaking with you. And is there any photos or anything you want to send through to me to put up with this link, or you just want to use one of your photos? Or
yeah, I'll send you something. I was actually as soon as we get off here, I'll send you something.
No worries. All good. And I'd like to keep putting your links up to your photos too. Garth, you've got
no
those.
No problem. And, put those. You want any of the pictures, you know, they're always available to you. No problem.
Yeah, I'm using them for our podcast project, Garth, because they're great photos. I like the chair one you did, Jay. You know, the black and white one I put up on our Facebook page?
Yep, that was in a place that was built, I think it was 1920. Something.
Yeah, just an abandoned chair there. It's and I like it because it's like, who are we going to interview this week? Who's going to be in the chair? You know,
there you go.
So I like it. Yeah, it's very good. Thanks for letting us use those, and thanks for this. And share this podcast around Geo to all your friends and anyone you would like to.
Yeah.
And keep listening. And it's been great chatting with you.
Yes, all the best, Geo.
Yeah. All right.
Stay
guys.
Safe and keep in touch.
All right, keep in touch, guys. Talk to you later.
Yes, okay. You take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, guys, so we're all done. And,
all done.
Nice guy, Giovanni.
Yes.
It's great to speak with all different types of people, isn't it, on this show? It's really fun to do. And we'll do this again next week.
All right, mate. You take care.
Okay. Ciao for now, Garth Vader.
Yes.
May the force be with you.
Yes. May your gods be kind to you.